All right. Microphone's a little off today again. Reggie, how can I expect my instrument to be at optimum performance if the conduit to the instrument, the microphone, is not correctly placed? Okay, here we go. Are you ready to go, Reggie? I am. Put it in the books, episode 408. And just get that finger ready. Let's try to get some real tight. No, there's that weirdness. There's always a delay, but you know, I think we've got a chemistry now. You could feel when I'm about that on that last couple words. If you hit it just before, it might hit right perfect. Let's try to get it that time, huh? What do you say, pal? All right, here we go. Star, smile, strong. Okay, Reg, this is up to you now. Here we go. Let's see if we can do this. Moo moo brown cow. Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, look, I appreciate you listening over the year, over the years to this podcast. Every week, believe me, it's your effort that keeps my effort going. I'm doing this for you. Hey, don't get me wrong. I enjoy doing it. It's fun, but I'm doing this to share with you, to send out those good entertainment vibes. So you got to come back in return, right? So go out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. If we're all working together, only good things can happen. Of course, if you like what you hear, don't forget, you can go to WGNRadio.com, hit the prompt for the podcast section, then go in there and find the prompt for my specific podcast, and my goodness, what will be in store for you? Podcast after podcast after podcast, just keep loading more, keep scrolling down, and keep enjoying hopefully what we have to offer here. We've been doing this since 2016. This is episode 408. So, last week on the podcast, I was discussing the fact that my wife and I went on an enjoyable, excellent trip. And somewhat exotic trip, I guess you would call it. We went on a cruise, on a cruise ship, but we didn't go to the Caribbean. We didn't go to Hawaii. We didn't go to a warm weather climate. We went to the Arctic Circle. Yes, the Arctic Circle on a cruise ship to search for the Northern Lights. And I promise I will get to some recaps of the actual trip. I will give you a little insight into Toronto's travels. But before that, I have to talk about some of the things that led up to the trip. We have to do this in chronological order. You know I love lists. I like order. So I can't jump the gun. I don't want to tell you about the trip until I told you about all the preparations and some of the little things that happened before we actually got on the trip. And so last week, I told you about how basically our first flight, we had a connection flight. We started our trip in Bergen, Norway. That's where we went up to in the Arctic Circle to northern Norway. And so we started in a city called Bergen, Norway. And so we had to fly Chicago to Frankfurt and then Frankfurt to Bergen. And on the 8.5, 9-hour flight, I was somewhat complaining, I guess. Emphasis on the somewhat. The irony is on the somewhat. That the woman in front of me reclined all the way back in her chair and basically was in my lap for 9 hours. And I was saying how, you know, we have to do something about the seats reclining back because obviously people don't give a hoot about who's behind them. And I actually got a very interesting email from one of our regular listeners, Craig, who said, I'm not sure where he found this, if this was his idea or someone else's, but he did email it to me and said that so clearly I'm not the only one complaining about this. This is a rampant problem. And so this person or Craig, I'm not sure, as I said, if he was passing on a message he read somewhere. It said, if the person in front of you on a plane does fully recline and they are basically in your lap, which I am not exaggerating, I could barely eat, and the screen that I was watching, the screen that's inserted in the back of the seat in front of you, I'm not exaggerating. It was about 6 inches from my face, which is not a fun way to watch anything. Okay, especially for 9.5 hours. I mean, this woman did move up briefly to eat. And then boom, right back down. If I would have had my head down, if I had been going into, as I said last week, if I would have had my head down, going through that little basket where you can put some stuff in the seat in front of you, if I had my head down at that moment when she just unceremoniously, quickly, without any hesitation, without any warning, just shot the seat back down. Didn't match. She had no. It was as if there was no one behind her, and if there was, which there was, me, she didn't care. But I could have. I mean, she could have nailed me in the head, and probably cut my head with the force that she just laid back, just reclined and put all of her weight on that seat. Unbelievable rudeness. But what he said, advice said to people that this happens to, if in fact someone in the plane goes all the way back and reclines and they are in your lap, the only, you know, aside from pushing them and creating a scene, which I once again I that's not my scene, this person suggested to aim your air conditioner. Put your little nozzle at the top above each seat has a little air conditioner nozzle to blow some cool air. So as a point of retaliation and maybe sending a message, if this person is indeed in your lap and there's not much you can do about it, what you could do in some way to lodge a protest here, a silent protest, if you will, is to turn the nozzle of your air conditioning on full blast and aim it right at their head, right at their face. If it ever happens, I may try that. Now, the only problem is, and if you travel on planes, you know this, it all really depends on what kind of plane you get. There's still some planes that are a little older. But the newer planes, I'm not very happy with the newer planes in terms of the air conditioning. I like to have air blowing on me in the plane. And the older planes had the really nice air conditioning nozzle. It was literally a nozzle. It stuck out. Pardon my usage here, but it was kind of like a nipple. Okay? It was like a sticking out, like a big nozzle. And you would turn it and it would really blast air. I love those. I love to get on an older plane. The first thing I do when I sit in my chair in a plane is to look up and see what kind of air conditioning vent there is there. The new ones have this kind of, almost looks like a flower, like a daisy, with these four little holes, and the air doesn't really come out. The holes are small. even on full blast, the air doesn't really hit you. But those older ones with those nozzles, man, that was like Silkwood air. I mean, that was industrial air. That was super power turbo air conditioning. So in an older plane, that would really send a message, because those nozzles, when put on full blast, really did and do sometimes, if you still can find an older plane that you're on, does blow the air the way it's supposed to. It literally cools you. It feels good. The other one, just to me, is just it's cursory. It's almost like obligatory. It's there, but it doesn't really do the job like those old ones did. But I might try that again if I get someone in my lap. But so anyway, before I get into the actual trip, because it was a fun trip, but I enjoy sharing these my little adventures with you. And people have responded; they enjoy hearing about some of the trips that we've gone on and some of the funny things that happen. As I said many times, the great thing about a vacation is you could have everything planned down to a T, and it's the things that happen that you could never plan for on a trip that wind up being the most memorable. And this trip, while it had everything we had hoped for, to some extent, a great extent, there were some things that happened, of course, in the course of living that you could never plan for. But then add memories to that trip in addition to the expected memories that you will have, what your itineraries are, what you're going to see. That's always exciting. But then it's these other little things that just happen as a part of life. Because, of course, when you're on a vacation, you're still a part of life. You can have it all, you know, your planes on time, your itineraries down to the minute, but life still happens. And to me, many times, it's those little personal situations that arise during a trip that you always remember more than what you planned for. When I was younger, my parents and I and my extended family, we went on a trip to Mexico. And we went to Mexico City and Acapulco. And while we were in Acapulco, we had an earthquake. 6.5 earthquake. That's a pretty good earthquake. That's a good shake. And our hotel shook for a while. It moved. Our sink cracked with the movement of that earthquake. And we had cracks in the ceiling. So that was no small little tremor. That was a real earthquake. 6.5. Talk to anybody that knows about earthquakes. That's a good size earthquake. If you ask me now, and granted, I was maybe 13 or 14, but if you ask me about that Acapulco trip, I remember a few things about places we went to and what we saw, but I remember that earthquake. And what happened right before it, and while it happened, and after. That I remember. That wasn't on our itinerary. It didn't say, oh, and by the way, when you go to Acapulco, your second day there, there's going to be a 6.5 earthquake. That wasn't part of the tour excursions on the itinerary. But once again, that's become the main memory of the Mexico trip. And how we all, what happened to us individually during the earthquake, and then sharing the stories with family members. So that's what I'm talking about. And I've got a few of those on this trip as well. Every trip has them, and you know that. But as I said, I wanted to talk about a few things that led up to the trip. So last week I talked about this on this 9-hour flight to Frankfurt. This woman literally in my lap for almost the whole trip. Very rude. But even before I got on the trip, even before I got on the plane, this has been a constant thorn in my side when I travel. And I, as I said before, we can't have instant communication here during the podcast, but I do consider this a dialogue. And if you can't help me, maybe you know somebody who can. Please feel free. I post my the podcast link 3 times a week on my Facebook page, which is just Jim Toronto, also Elton Jim. So you'll see the link up there. I really need some help from postal workers. I need to understand the process that goes on at the post office. And here's where I need some insight, because it's driving me crazy. When we go on vacation, as I think you should, and now let's be honest, have you noticed in the last several years, certainly in the last five, if not even longer, your daily intake of mail is much less? I still get a lot of my bills. I shouldn't even say that. I get all my bills still sent to me in the mail. I know I'm Fred Flintstone. I'm in bedrock, but I'm still leery about putting out real personal information out there on the internet, like routing numbers for your checking account or for your savings account. I just have a problem with that. So I sit down still and write out my checks and mail them. Yes, it's a pain. Yes, it costs for the stamp. I understand it, but you know what? There's still a part of me. I still hear stories, and I'm just a little leery on that. And believe me, I've given out personal information over the internet, but that one, you know, every so often you get these letters. Have you ever gotten these letters in the mail? We got one just recently from a company that said, we just want to let you know that we had a breach in our security, and your email may, you know, locally here in the Chicago area, I don't know if people were aware of it, but one of the major hospitals in the Chicago area, the Lurie Children's Hospital, was completely out of service for any computer access for more than a week or so, done by some hackers. I don't know if it was a ransom kind of hacking thing. They really didn't get into specifics as to what happened or how it was resolved, but that's a major hospital without computer access of, I believe, any kind. Not just your personal portals now that everybody has if you're a regular patient, your MyChart kind of thing, but I think it was throughout the entire hospital, the computer system was down and hacked. And it wasn't just a day. It was at least a week, if not more. So, I'm still leery on that. But anyway, my point is, aside from bills, I mean, if I didn't get my bills in the mail, if I did all my bills online, like 99.9% of the people do, I assume, we would really have very little mail, except for catalogs and junk mail. I mean, the only thing we really get, I think, of any worth is that I need to get are my bills. You know, there's that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer says, I'm gonna cancel my mail. If I was doing my, which of course, then it winds up being a big, kind of Seinfeldian, plot twist, where the Postmaster General confronts Kramer and says, "Oh, that's my job, and you're just going to continue to get your mail." And it kind of scares him in a room with a light, and poor Newman, tell them my story. But to be honest with you, if I didn't get my mail, if I didn't get my bills in the mail, I don't think I'd need mail. First of all, I don't understand why, in this day and age, with the internet, and with most people using the internet to shop and browse on the internet, we still get catalogs. Mainly, it's my wife gets them for clothing, but those catalogs are still printed on high quality paper with high quality images. Those catalogs are not cheap. Believe me, I used to be in the publishing company, in the publishing world, and worked as a managing editor for a magazine. And believe me, the printing costs are the highest cost you have. Even when I worked on the corporate side in PR, I used to work on the annual report for several companies, and the printing was the major expense. And I find it strange in today's world why some companies, now, you know, the restoration hardware seems to have stopped finally sending that 10-pound, remember that, that 10-pound catalog they were sending out maybe about 5 or 10 years ago? They've wised up, because that catalog, while it made some news, that thing had to cost a fortune. And I don't know how many they printed, but that thing weighed a ton. It was all in full color. It was printed on high-quality paper, and that had to cost a ton. We don't get the restoration hardware phone book anymore. But we're still getting catalogs, and I find it, I guess it's good push marketing, but wow. Usually there's not as many at this time of the year. It's mostly more toward the holiday season where they really start coming in droves. But I mean, for the most part, I throw them out. I throw them out even before my wife gets to see them, because she'll keep them, and then we get this stack, and then it becomes like hoarder central. So I know the brands that she likes, I keep those. But if we get these other ones that I just throw them out. Because they'll stack up. It's amazing. But if not for catalogs and our bills, I don't know what kind of mail we'd even get anymore. Nobody sends you. I mean, I still get some, you know, we get Christmas cards, right? And I still send out birthday cards and anniversary cards to close friends and family. And we still get a couple of those, not many. But really, it wouldn't be that hard to cancel the mail if you don't get your bills sent to you. It would be kind of easy to cancel the mail, like Kramer, had proposed almost 30 years ago. That's not that crazy. But regardless, when I go on a trip, I always put a mail hold on, right? So this way, the mail doesn't build up in your mailbox. You know, so it looks like you're not home, obviously. We certainly always try not to order anything, you know, any packages, especially in today's world. My gosh. First of all, you know, the first fear of having a package delivered while you weren't home was that if the package was outside your door for a day or two, once again, it would give an inkling to people passing by that maybe you weren't home. But nowadays, my gosh, if you spot a package on your front door, you better grab that thing before someone else does. Before, the fear of the package being on your stoop too long was that someone might think you're not home. Now, having a package on your stoop too long opens it up to be stolen by somebody. That's our new reality. And now that's part of our reality. Don't you love how that's happened? You can't, you know, and some delivery services, thank God, you know, they try to at least put the package behind something. We have a couple of columns in front of our house, so at least, you know, some people will hide them behind there. So from the street, you can't really see it, which is great. But other delivery services, they put it right in the middle, right in front of the door. It might as well have a big billboard sign with neon flashing saying, hey, there's a package here. So when we, you know, a couple of weeks before we're about to travel, we don't order anything. Just because it says it's going to come tomorrow doesn't mean it will. There's often delays, so we just, you know, hold off. In fact, I wrote a list of things that we needed to order. Some supplies for things, you know, that we would order online through, you know, Amazon or other things. And it's like, I'm okay, we need this, but when we come back, you know, we don't need it right now. We need to have it, you know, we need to have this supply, but as soon as we come home, then, and I had a nice little list there. You'd be surprised at some of the things that you order online. But we always try to refrain from order anything. So this way, no packages will come while we're gone. So once again, keep the front door clean. And once again, I said, put a hold on the mail, even though we don't get as much. If you're gone for more than a week or so, I don't care, you know, even if you get two or three letters a day, after a week or so, that still could pile up, and all of a sudden your mailbox could look open. And once again, we live in a world now where you really have to be even more careful. We've got people so brazen, as I said, these days, that they literally go right up to your stoop and take packages off your front porch, which is, wow, that's gutsy. But that's the world we live in today. So, I, as a conscientious person, you know me, I go and go to the post office and put the hold on our mail. And I've been doing this for years, right? That's what you should do. And I know the form very well. It's a nice, big, yellow, cardboard-ish kind of form, very easy to fill out, just your name, address, when you want the mail to stop, when you want the mail to begin, if you want it to be delivered then to your house after that specific date, or if you want them to hold it until you come and pick it up. That's the one that I do. I say, hold it, I will come and pick it up. And just as I was saying, all I know is 15 or 20 years ago, if we were gone for a week, if not longer, you know, you go sometimes on a 10, 12-day kind of trip. When we would be gone for, you know, almost 2 weeks or so, when I'd go to the post office to pick up our held mail, I would get a bin of, you know, to hold all the mail. There was a lot of mail. Once again, I mean, a lot of it probably was junk mail and catalogs, but my point is, over a 10 to 12 day period, there was a lot of mail. They gave you the bin and you could bring it home and then bring it back. And now when we're away for 10 days, week to 10 days, this last trip was about 2 weeks all told. We had a nice amount of mail, but it was just wrapped in a couple of rubber bands. No bin needed for 2 weeks. Wow. I was like, wow, this is, I mean, sometimes I'm like, this is all there was, but that's the world we live in. I mean, everything is so electronic. And as I said, even with that mail, if you took out all the catalogs and all the other junk letters, there's probably 5 bills. I paid as many bills as I could before we left. And there were some that came in the time we were gone, but that was about it. But anyway, even though there's less mail, I always subscribe to the better safe than sorry adage, and so I have a hold on the mail. And as I said, so you can do this online, or you can do it in person. Okay. What I just talked about in terms of how I pay my bills, what do you think I do? If you guessed going down to the post office and filling out the form and handing it to somebody, you are exactly correct. At the same time, I preface that by saying I have done it online, which is one of the key topics of what I want to talk about today. Why I don't do it online anymore. So I really need the help of a postal service employee and maybe even a mail carrier, because I need to understand what the process is back there, right? Okay, so I want a mail hold. As I said, I go to my post office. Now, I've been doing this for years. My wife and I travel quite a bit, so this is a constant part of my life. Is holding the mail, of getting the mail hold done. It's on one of my lists. When I have my list of, you know, prep for vacation, mail hold is on there. It's right next to pack and everything else. The key things, mail hold is an important item list on my things to do on for vacation preparation as anything else is. Lock the doors and pack and mail hold. They're all, in my mind, they are all of equal importance. So, as I said, I go to the post office. I get the yellow form for the mail hold. I fill it out. I sign it. I give it to a postal worker behind their desk and say I've got a mail hold. I show them my ID to verify that that's my address, and they stamp, they put some kind of stamp on it, and it goes back there. Now, you know, if you go to the post office, there is the there are the booths, the windows, where you can transact business with a postal worker, buying something, buying stamps, mailing a box, picking up your mail, whatever it is. And then you could see behind you, there's that little hallway, that little walkway, and there's some lights back there, and you can sort of see some stuff back there, but you're not really sure what's back there. Back there is the post office, that little front lobby. That's nice. They fancy that up for you. But the nerve center of the post office is back there. It's behind the windows where you're taken care of. The doors are those opening. It's back there. Now, I don't know what's back there. I would love to see what's back there, just to get a sense of. Maybe I'm ignorant. I don't know, but I don't know how the mail system works. Right? We get the mail. I think it's an amazing service, to be honest with you. When you think about it, you have this letter. You put this little stamp on it, and you put it in this blue box. And it gets to where it's supposed to go, and people do the same thing on the other end, and it gets to you. I really don't know the process of how it works, and especially in today's world, more automated, I'm sure, than ever before. So I wish when I was a little kid, like when we were in school, I think it would have been great to have had a field trip to the post office. I don't know. Do they give tours of the post office? Do they do field trips? I'd love to get a tour of the post office. I would love to go back there. I would love to trace and follow the course of a letter. I'd love to see from when the postal worker picks it up out of the mailbox with all the other ones, where it goes, how it's sorted, how they get to the other places, what are the different processes, how many different places does that letter go before it actually gets to the final post office and to its final destination. I would love to see how it works. I think it's as much as we give the post office, a lot of criticism, it's so high, it got lost in the mail, snail mail, the whole thing. I still believe, and there's been a lot of controversy about the post office in the last 5 or 6 years, 10 years. I get it, but I still think it's still an amazing process. Even if there's a lot of hiccups in it, it still seems to be a pretty impressive process that you could mail this thing. I mean, I get letters from people across the Atlantic. I have friends in England. And I get letters or Christmas cards from them, and it's like, wow, this thing came all the way across the ocean, and it's got to my house, and vice versa. I send them to them, too. So to me, it's a marvel. Yes, there are problems. Yes, there's inefficiencies. I get all that, but still, the mail does get there. Sometimes it's late, sometimes it doesn't, but for the most part, it does get there. Maybe not always perfect, which is my point today. So as much as I'm going to complain a little bit about the mail, I want to be on record at the outset to say I am a fan of the U.S. mail. I use the U.S. mail quite a bit. I mail a lot of things. I mail my bills. I mail my cards. I mail letters. So I am still a a proponent and a major user of the U.S. Postal Service. Some people might not even know how to mail a letter. But so I say this as a user and as a fan. And so I think that I've got some credibility here to then question when I see a hiccup, because I am a major user of the U.S. Postal Service. So I'd love to go and see how the whole thing works, but that's not my point. What my point is here is about the mail hold. As I said, I give them this yellow form, and I don't know where it goes. I know I've seen them walk and put it either in a stack or they walk back there. Oh, and I'd love to know what goes on back there, especially what goes on with this yellow card. It is stamped or some kind of stamp. I always see the postal worker stamp it, and then they put it somewhere. And then I don't know. Then I cross my fingers. Now, I, in the past, would go maybe 2 or 3 days before I wanted the mail hold. So, for instance, if I wanted my mail held starting on the 15th, I would go on maybe the 12th. I figure what takes so long about this? I'm giving you this 3 days beforehand to tell you that I want my mail held starting on the 15th. So I would think that if I give that to you on the 12th, that should be enough time for you to process this. It's not like the whole world is holding mail all at one time. I can't believe there's like 1,000 mail hold, forms being handed in at the same time for the same date. So I would do it 3 times, 3 days beforehand. And I, in my mind, that was done, right? I would cancel the mail on the day that I was leaving. And for the most part, as you know, you take an early morning flight. Or even if you're taking a trip by car or some other way, you get an early start. And my mail, for the most part, is delivered, it seems like, anywhere between 3 or 4 or 5 in the afternoon, much later than it used to be. It used to be delivered in the morning. Not sure why, for whatever reason, but whatever. So on that day that I have the mail stopped, I'm leaving the house. I'm assuming I am... Once again, social contract, I'm assuming that this is taken care of. I have handed in the correct form. I have handed it in. I filled it out correctly. I have given it to the Postal Service in advance of when I want it, and there's no questions been asked, so I'm assuming the mail will be held, let's use that date before, on the 15th, the day I said. So when I come home, week later, 5 days later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, whatever it is, I'm assuming when I come home, I will lift up my mailbox and there will be no mail in that box because it has been held at the post office as I have requested. That's the expectation that I believe should be fulfilled. I am not exaggerating. We have lived in our current location for more than 25 years. As I said, we travel quite a bit each year. I have never come home after a trip with an empty mailbox. Hasn't been stuffed, but there's been at least 1 or 2 or 3 days of mail in that box where there should have been none. And I can't understand why. I can't understand why. So, It was very frustrating because I'm like, hey, what if something was really big? What if there was a big package or something? Once again, it would have been sitting here. I've done my part. I've played by the rules. I filled out the form. I did it correctly. I did it in advance. So I'm assuming that now the post office will do its job. And I am not exaggerating, so much so that I have we have a little phone book. Once again, I'm still living in the 20th century. Yes, I know I should have it. You know what? To be honest with you, now that I say that, I'm actually going to do that. I am going to put, I have my local post office number written. We have a phone book because we use that a lot, you know, for our Christmas cards with people's names and address and phone numbers. And that phone book is pretty old. I mean, so it's kind of, I'm sure it's even predated in many ways, the internet. So we've got a little phone book that we have everybody's important names and numbers and addresses in. On the front page, the first page, not even where the A's are, but the opening page that says phone book. You know, when you open up the little cover, and there's a little opening page. I don't even know what it says. But, you know, and then the little A tab sticks out and you start going down. Before that, on that front page, I have the direct line to our local post office written. And I have the woman who, I don't know if she runs our post office in the town or not, but she always answers the phone. So I have her number down. I have the post office direct number, not the general number where you get some general post office number that's an 800 number. No, this is the local post office number. And in the front, very front page of our phone book of all our important contacts. And I have the woman's name. Because I have spoken to her so many times. I know her name. Her name's Pamela. There are people that I see on a weekly basis for other types of services, and I don't know their names. But I know Pamela's because I have had to call Pamela and talk to her and say the same spiel, and I'm not exaggerating. Now, I don't know if she's been there for 25 years. I think she has, to be honest with you. I didn't get her name until about, then I wised up. I said, I have to start getting her name. So about 7 years ago or so, I asked her name. Because I said, well, you know, I'm going to be out of town. Can I call you back? Yes, my name's Pamela. And I wrote it down. But so now I have the name and I know her name. It's Pamela. I know it. Because every trip I go on, I have to call Pamela. So here's what we used to come back from these trips and there would always be at least one, you could tell there's at least one day's of mail in that box, you say, well, Jim, I mean, you're gone for 12 days. There's only one day they miss, but why miss any? I'd love to know what the process is when you have a mail hold. So if there is any postal service employee and maybe even mail carrier, I would love to get some insight as to what the process is for the mail hold. What happens when I turn in that yellow card? Now, I will say, I went online a couple of times, right? I'm not anti-technology. I might seem like it, but no. Several years ago, I went online, and they said you could do it online. I'm like, you know what? I live close to the post office. But sometimes there's a long line, whatever. So I said, let me do it online. Once again, the scariest thing about online is there's very little confirmation that goes on. You know, I went on, I filled it, the form right, I hit submit. I got an email back that says, you know, we've received your mail hold. Okay. And then I came home and there was mail. And you know what? If there's only one day's worth, okay, fine. But sometimes I was gone for, say, 4 or 5 days, and there was easily 4 or 5 days of mail in there, which seemed to me that that request never even got processed. So then I said, I am not doing it online anymore. I don't care if I got a confirmation. at least in even though doing it in person probably doesn't guarantee that it's going to get processed any more efficiently than it would be online, but at least I have some satisfaction that I handed it to somebody, that they touched it and saw it. Because when you hit something into the Ethernet, you hit submit, I don't know where it goes. For all I know, that email coming back was an automatic reply, and that my email got lost somewhere, was never seen. Even though I got this confirmation, it was never seen. At the very least, when I take in the yellow form and hand it to somebody, I'm looking in their eyes, and I can honestly say I brought this in and gave it to you or you. I can't do that if I hit submit. I don't know where it's going. I don't know how it's being, the confirmation's coming out, and I don't know if or when anyone has ever seen it. So I go in person. Now, this has become such an ongoing problem that now, like before, as I said, initially, when I went in, I would put down the date, when the actual date I was leaving town, as the day I wanted my mail to stop. I can't do that anymore. I can't do that anymore because I can't trust that my mail hold request is going to be fulfilled, because I've come home and I've had mail, sometimes few letters, yes, but sometimes clearly a daily delivery, which bothers me because, as I said, I don't want my mailbox to be open, filled with mail. It could blow out. Could give signs to any ne'er-do-wells that I'm not home. I'm being conscientious enough to say, hold my mail. So much so, as I said, that now let's use the 15th again as the day I'm leaving. First of all, if I'm leaving on the 15th of the month, I will go and submit my yellow mail hold card a week before I'm leaving. Not 2 or 3 days, which I think is more than enough, but it's proven that it isn't somehow. So I go a week in advance. I mean, what bothers me too is I wish that, when I hand in the card and they punch it, I wish they gave me a receipt to say, yes, you did turn this into me. That's a part of the process which I believe I should get. Because once again, I'm handing it to somebody and I am trusting that they are going to put it in the right spot and that yellow card is going to be processed and that yellow card is going to be seen and that the yellow card is going to be followed. The directions on it are going to be followed. There's a lot of assumption going on there without any kind of return from me. I think I should get a receipt to say, yes, at least you did bring this in on, let's say, March 8th. Let's use March 15th as the day I'm leaving. I go now there a week in advance, not 1 or 2 or 3 days before, which I think is more than enough, at least 3 days. I go a week in advance. So if I'm leaving on the 15th, I go on the 8th. I fill out the card and I hand it in. I wish I did get some receipt back somehow to prove. But I shouldn't need one because the process should work. But clearly it doesn't, at least in my case. I don't know if other people, have had the same situation. But mine happens, and I'm not exaggerating. I wish I was. I'm not. Every time we travel. Every time. Which is why I want to know how the process works. I have to see where the breakdown is. And I'd love to know how that we could improve this. Because this doesn't seem that hard. So now I go in, if I'm gonna be out of town starting on the 15th, I go to the post office, fill out the form, and hand it to somebody a week before. So in this case, I go on the 8th. Okay. When I fill out the form to have the mail stopped, I can't trust that the mail is going to be stopped when I'm out of town. So if I'm leaving on the 5th, or say I'm leaving on the 15th, on the card that I fill out for my mail hold, now I want my mail stopped on the 12th. So I at least have 1 or 2 days to see if my mail hold is being put into action. Because if it isn't, I need to call then and now make sure that the next day it doesn't come. So I need at least a 2-day buffer before I'm really leaving. Because if there is a problem, I need to call that day and then make sure that the next day or two, now the mail, it's been rectified. So when I do a mail hold now, I stop my mail 3 days before I'm actually leaving. Because I know inevitably I'm going to wind up calling Pamela at the post office to say, I had a mail hold and I'm getting my mail. It happened. It happens every time. That's a great line from a Poco song. It happens all the time. This crazy love of mine. Sorry, I digress. But it does happen all the time. So now I go in. I've been going in once. I go in a week earlier now for at least 5 to 7 years, if not more. And I am now doing the, I mean, I don't want to do the mail too soon because, like I said, I want to get as many bills in as I can so I can mail them off before I leave because inevitably some are going to come in while we're gone. So I like to get as many off and paid before the deadlines. So I don't want to do it too far in advance, but I want to give myself at least a 2 or 3 day buffer because I know that one of those 2 days, the mail is going to be delivered and I have to call Pamela and then I have to make sure that the day after I call Pamela, then the mail is not delivered again. So I give it 3 days. So we went on this trip in February. I went the week before we were leaving. I posted the day I want the mail begin held 3 days before I'm actually leaving to give me the buffer zone. And we're off to the races. Now, much to my surprise, the first day I check my mail, the first day that I ask for it to be stopped, even though I'm still here, got to play this game. The first day I'm here, no mail. Oh, thank God. Maybe this is the time. Maybe this time. Fingers crossed. Let's say I left on the 14th. Let's say I left on the 15th. Check my mailbox on the 12th. I gave my request on the 8th. I gave it. Oh no, I shouldn't even say that. So, like for instance, now on the 12th, I go a week before I want, you know, my fake date. So I shouldn't even say that. So I went on the 5th. Yeah, I'm even wrong. I went 7 days before my fake date. Not my real date of leaving, my fake date. So I went down there, let's say if I'm leaving on the 15th, I went there on the 5th of February, let's say, because my first day is of mail hold is the 12th. And I opened my box on the 12th and no mail. I heard a choir of angels. Fingers crossed, maybe this is it. I've got the 13th and the 14th still to see if my request has been processed correctly, that the mail carrier is aware of it, and that the mail is going to be held. But so far, day one, We've nailed it. I'm ecstatic. These are the things that excite me during my week. Let you know what kind of life I lead. I'm excited when my mail hold request is actually fulfilled on the first day. Until the next day, the 12th, when I open my mailbox about 7 o'clock at night, and sure enough, there is a mail delivery. Which means now, tomorrow morning, which now will be the 14th, and I'm leaving on the 15th, so this has to work now. I call Pamela on the 14th, and at 7:30, before everybody gets started, I called the one time and realized that 7:30 is a good time to call Pamela. She answers the phone, and she, you know, nothing's crazy yet at the post office. I think the post office opens till 9. So I call at 7:30. There's nobody there yet in terms of customers from the outside. Phone rings. I call now every day. Every time I have to call, I call Pamela at 7:30, and she picks up the phone. And I have my spiel. Here's my address. I turned my thing in last week. My mail hold was supposed to start yesterday. I got mail, the other day. I got mail delivered yesterday. I'm hoping, yes, hold on a second. What's your address? I'll go. She puts me on hold and she goes, I assume, I can't see, obviously, it's not a Zoom call. I assume she's going back there. That mysterious place back there at the post office. And in about 5 to 7 minutes, she comes back and she says, yes, indeed, I do see your mail hold request. Yes, I know. I handed it in. I know. I'm glad you found it, but, you know, she goes, yes, you did. Yes, you did have a mail request. I said, yeah, well, I don't say it to her. I say it to myself. Yeah, I know I did. That's why I'm calling you. Yes, I do see it. I will speak to the carrier to make sure that that they're aware. And I'm like, you know, one time I asked and I realized it doesn't really matter. Pamela she's very nice and she at least acknowledges and she apologizes. But me complaining is not going to really do anything. I think this is a problem that's bigger than Pamela. So I just say, okay, thank you. I'll make sure I'm going to check today to make sure it's not there. And I say, because I'm going to be out of town, you know, and I please, yes, okay. So every time. So I'd love to know what happens to that yellow card. What happens to that mail card request? Why is it even possible for my request to not be regularly, on a daily basis, fulfilled? Why on the 12th was there no mail, like there shouldn't have been, but then on the 13th, why would there be mail delivered? Or on the 14th, why would there be mail delivered? If the request is there, if the date is stated, I don't understand why, where's the breakdown? What happens in my world, in my view of what goes on back there? I assume that all of our individual mail for our house, I assume, now once again, I might be completely wrong. Jim, you don't know what you're talking about. Then please, I need to be educated on this. When all the mail for my town gets delivered to our local post office, I assume that every house, every address, has a slot somewhere. Is that wrong? And I would assume that whoever sorts the mail puts the mail in the slot for that address. And then I would assume that the mail carrier then comes in and knows that their route and pulls the individual slots out. I mean, I assume that's the way it works. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But if I'm correct, then I just don't know why, for instance, my yellow card, or you make a Xerox copy of it, and you should tape it right over my slot there where my mail, my daily mail would go before the carrier picks it up, so that they know it, there's a hold here. The sorter doesn't even put it in the mailbox. It shouldn't even get to the mailbox if that's the way it works. But there's somewhere in the process, if the way I'm imagining of the way mail is sorted and put together for it to get delivered at your local post office, if I'm completely wrong, then I'm completely wrong. But I would love to know then how, what the process is on a normal day. So then if there is a change in the normal process, for instance, a mail hold, how is the mail hold then communicated to either the sorter or the carrier or both or one of them? I don't know. But clearly there's a breakdown here on a daily basis. There's no permanent, it seems like there's no permanent way of saying that there's a mail hold here for a week, because one day the mail is delivered and the next day it isn't, and the next day it isn't. And then I come home and inevitably one or two days of mail is there while I was gone. So the mail hold, the permanence of the mail hold, the length of the mail hold is not somehow being communicated. And I can't understand why, especially in today's automated modern world. So if there are any postal workers out there, even and especially some mail carriers, I would love to know how this works. And I would love to know how the mail is sorted regularly. And I would love to know how the mail hold then is processed within that process, so that everybody is made aware that there's no mail to be delivered. And I'd love to know why that system breaks down. And I'd love to know, postal service person, mail carrier, if you think that the process is broken. Because then we need to fix it. Because this happens to me every time. Every time. And it doesn't seem like it should be that hard. But maybe I'm ignorant. I don't know how the process works, but I would love to know. So I'd love to see where the breakdown is, and maybe we could come up with some solution, because it's not working for my address. Let's put it that way. I don't know if it works for everybody else, but I consistently get mail delivered to my home when I'm not here, when I've expressly set the dates as to when I want it, the hold to start and when to stop. Within that time period, inevitably, I get mail delivered, sometimes every day, sometimes one or two days. It shouldn't be delivered any days. Hold means hold. If I put it for the 12th, it should start the 12th, and when I come home on the 20th, I show up in my mailbox and there should be no mail in that box. And it's never happened. And as I said, it's happened even time when I do it two or three days before. While I'm home, the mail is delivered. And thankfully, I'm able to call Pamela, and then she has to make a special request or a special effort here to make sure that the mail carriers know. And even after that happens, when I come home, there's still mail. So please, if you are related to somebody, if you know somebody, if you are somebody who works for the post office, I would love to know how the process works in terms of how mail is sorted in general. And then specifically, I'd love to know how the mail hold process works to circumvent that, to make sure that the mail for that prescribed time, 3 days, 5 days, 14 days, is not delivered. As I said, post office. I'm one of your biggest fans. I still buy stamps. I still mail letters. I still mail bills. I still mail cards. I'm on your side. All I'm asking for is when I ask for a mail hold, you hold it. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 408. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Hold the mail!